This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
For years, I was so fed up with shampoo, I just stopped washing my hair. I quit completely. I was so sick of poofy, frizzy, limp hair, distorting my natural oils. Until a few months ago, I found Modern Mammals, and it changed everything. And by the way, right now you can visit modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. So check that out. So look, I heard about this through the podcast, and before I agreed to advertise, they sent it to me and I was reluctant. But let me tell you, I should not have been. This stuff is absolutely magical. My hair felt better, smelled way better, and most importantly, looked better. And I know it will do the same for you as well. It doesn't have those hair-ruining chemicals like other products, and it doesn't leave any leftover residues. It works. Don't believe me? Go read their awesome reviews online as well. Go to modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use our promo code LSS so they know we sent you. What is up, Lead Singer Syndrome listeners? My name is Shane. I run this shit, Lead Singer Syndrome Podcast, a podcast where I bring other singers onto the show to talk about what it's like to be a lead singer. Now, listen, one thing about this show is that we always keep it real. Well, I always keep it real. This is my show. I do the intro. I do the interviews. I edit it. I do the graphics. I do it. I handle it. And I got a busy lifestyle, and sometimes it's not easy for me to, you know, take care of it. And right now, it's Sunday night. I'm in Hanover, Germany. I drank a bottle of wine, then I drank another half a bottle of wine, and I had a few beers and some shots. And so I'm drunk. Hey, whatever. It's real. This is real. The show is real. Everyone I talk to, it's a real interview. There's no bullshit. And today I talked to my friend Craig Owens of Chiodos. Great dude, one of my favorite people, a guy I respect tremendously. He's an amazing singer. He has so much singing ability. I know he's had some struggle with drugs and alcohol. We don't get into that in this podcast. We talk about what he's doing now with his new project, Bad Channels. We talk about his old band Drugs, the supergroup, which is a super interesting thing. And of course, we talk about Chiodos. And it's a great, great talk. One of my favorite podcasts I've done. Anyways, as always, if you want to get in touch with me, I love to hear from you, whether it's a Snapchat message, Twitter, whatever they're called, notification. I guess there are mentions on there too. Instagram, hit me up on whatever. Follow us on all of those. Facebook is going to be a bigger thing, so make sure you add us on Facebook. Also, I got to tell you guys about the All Access Club, which is really, really cool, and it's going to start up in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to say. We're going to start, that's going to be a thing. There's going to be subscriptions that you can add, and for just a few dollars a month, we're going to have that for you guys, and it's really exciting. We're going to be having additional bonus content podcasts. We're going to be having live chats with me where I'm going to be hanging out on Facebook and talking to you guys. If you guys want to know the upcoming guests, that's available, as well as like a whole bunch of Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise and all that fun stuff, free items, stuff mailed to your house. It's going to be cool because I know a lot of you people have been listening to this show for a year, and this is the first episode after a whole year. So thank you for a year of support. And finally, I'm giving you guys a chance to not just have one episode a week. If you guys want more stuff, more content, more love, more communication, whatever it is, you want to be a part of this show, we're going to give you that opportunity. So keep your ear to the ground because the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club is coming at you real soon. Coming in hot. For now, if you want to support the show, we got Christmas coming up. We have the Amazon affiliate link. So if you buy anything on Amazon, please just use this link. It's leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. Takes you right to the Amazon homepage. And whatever you buy, we get 4 to 6%. So again, you just go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. Log in as usual, and you're right there. Good to go. And it will really, really help us out. All right, that's the end of my intro. I'm sorry for my drunkenness. As always, this show is about real life. This show is not fake. This is not rock star shit. I try to avoid publicists at all costs. I try to come to singers directly, text them directly, get them on the show directly, because that is what this is about. Real talk, taking backstage conversations that I've had for 15 years and bringing them to you guys. And this one is one of my favorites. So here it is, my conversation with my great friend, Mr. Craig Owens. Hello?
Yo, what's up, man?
Hey, Craig, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Dude, it's been a long time, man.
I know, it's been way too long, right? It's
like,
crazy.
Like years, I think.
Has it gotten that far? I know like one, but like the S too? Like years?
I mean, I'm trying to remember the last time. I don't know.
I feel like it was in Kitchener.
When oh, I yeah, was, absolutely, you know, it was.
At Koi Fest.
That's absolutely the last time.
I think that might have been the last time. I don't know. Yeah.
It's been a while. It's been a long time. And you're my buddy, you know? You're my dude. So it's great to talk to you.
Dude, yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. You good?
I'm great, man. Same with me, same old, you know? Things in my life,
they
just...
I know, you're touring a bunch.
Yeah, we are. We had a crazy year. And last year too, we kind of went, this album cycle just kind of has just been like, okay, let's do another tour. And there's been like no breaks. But I still love it, man. So
that's awesome.
But hey, you know, I talk about my life. It's been so damn simple and consistent. You know, I've been in one band, like my entire adult life, and that's it. With you, man, it has been a roller coaster, to say the least.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. You know, for sure. It's not like I like signed up and like waited until I was tall enough to go on this ride. It's crazy. You know, like I can't believe, like, it's not like any of it was planned, you know, like,
sure.
All I really wanted to do was like sing. All I really wanted to do is like make music. And then, you know, different life circumstances kind of came in front of me, and then, you know, I've just done what I've had to do out of both passion, survival, and necessity,
right.
I guess.
Right.
You know, like, it wasn't ever, like, a conscious, like, you know, like, this is, I'm gonna, man, one day I'm gonna be in, like, 73 projects.
Like, no,
I
mean,
like that, you know, so.
You have to make a decision at the time what's best, you know, at that moment, and your future and everything. And I'm sure, I mean, you look back at all these decisions you had to make, and I'm sure some of them you look back and go, you know what, that was smart. And I'm sure a lot of them you go back and go, maybe I shouldn't have made that decision.
Yeah, for sure, on both sides. I mean, that's life, right?
Right, right.
That's growing and all that stuff. So, yeah, I've had to, you know, I kind of had to grow fast. I had a lot of really kind of heavy decisions. I had to go through, you know, some kind of experiences to get where I am today, you know, to say the least. And yeah, I wouldn't change it for the world.
Right.
I'm super stoked about life and just kind of like, you know, where I am, who I am. You know, I've got a great family. I've got great friends. I'm doing what I love. You know, I'm a workaholic, so I'm always in the studio producing, making music, doing that. So yeah, I'm happy with where I've landed, and I feel like all those things combined onto it. Sorry, I think that's Ron from Victory. Do you know Ron?
Ron from Victory? No.
Yeah, do you know Ron Platzer?
I don't think I do, no. I mean, I know Victory, obviously.
Yeah. Do you guys have like a falling out with them?
With Victory Records?
Yeah.
Sorry, putting you on blast. We didn't resign. Like, no, we didn't resign with them. You know, we did four records and we had some problems, but at the same time, like, I think we're still cool. Like,
yeah.
Tony came out to our show last year for our 10-year anniversary and stuff, so we're still cool.
That's awesome. Cool. Yeah, I'm taking that band Colors out.
Oh, nice.
On this tour, and he's just been really supportive and just calling, just, you know, well wishing. He's
nice.
A good guy. So,
well,
sorry
great.
About that. Anyways, yeah, I mean, I feel like that's why, you know, I'm able to enjoy my life right now.
Right.
You know, is because I've been through all that stuff. But yeah, it's definitely put some rings on my, I don't know, like
a tree, like you're an old tree with a lot of rings.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that analogy. Well, let's talk about, before we dive into the past, let's talk about what's going on right now with Craig Owens. Where the hell you been, man?
Yeah, right.
You know, like, I know you've been working, you say you're a workaholic, I know you've been producing, but just from like, you know, from hey, my buddy Craig from Chiodos, like, I feel like you've just been kind of, you know, in the background a little bit the last couple of years.
Yeah, I pretty much just hid, like, the past couple of years, to be honest. Like, I mean, towards kind of, you know, that, even, like, towards the end of, like, Chiodos, you know, I was kind of hiding. That was, like, a year and a half ago. So, yeah. Hiding a little bit. Sometimes, you know, you have to go away. And kind of spend some time with yourself to figure some things out and kind of push reset.
Sure.
You know, I was living in Malibu for the last like 3 years. So I spent a lot of time there, and then I decided to pack up my things, and drive across the country back to Detroit. And I've lived downtown Detroit for like the last, I guess since like last December. So coming back home, you know, and it's, I've just been, you know, working really, really hard, studio, you know, 6-7 days a week.
Wow.
Yeah. Just working until I like, my brain just doesn't work anymore and my eyes close and I have to like fall asleep. And then like, it's like, it wakes up with like the first thought that pops in my head and I just go, you know,
right.
And it's been great. It's been a lot of fun. So that's kind of where I've been. That's what I've been doing. You know, towards the end of my time in Malibu, I spent a lot of time with my my friend Eric Ron. Do you know Eric?
Yeah, I do know Eric. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great producer, and so we just spent some time together, and we said, you know, let's make some music. And I spent a lot of time with that. I mean, I listen to all kinds of music, anyways.
Sure.
I'm a pretty eclectic guy. You know, I think most musicians do.
I agree with that. Yeah.
And, you know, we decided to kind of try our hand at kind of like a Frank Ocean vibe, you know, something I kind of had thought in the back of my mind. I'd always been a big fan of, like, you know, like Bjork and Imogen Heap and James Blake and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Just the atmospheric stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I wanted to mix it with like some lo-fi vibes of like, you know, The Weeknd or in The Neighborhood specifically. And kind of do our own thing with it. And Eric was like stoked to do it too. So we sat down, and then the first song we made together, was Complicated, the one with Tyler Carter on the record. So,
right.
You know, like, yeah, we hit it on the head, and we were just like, all right, let's go. So we just kept making music and hanging out and arguing Michigan versus Ohio sports pretty much.
Oh, jeez. Man, Michigan, I can't believe Saturday's game, man.
I know. I'm so bummed.
Like the one game, okay, we're going to talk about Michigan football for a little while. And I've been consistently calling Ohio the worst state.
Nice.
On the podcast.
Thank you.
You know what though, Craig? I know we're both big Michigan fans. I actually went to an Ohio State game this year.
Really? Like what is their place called? The Shoe? Is that it?
Is that right?
Maybe I made that
I
up.
Should know that. I
don't
was
know.
Just there. I love all the people right now
play?
Screaming at their radio. People, Ohio State fans screaming
right?
the name.
I know.
You know what? We don't know. It's not the big house. We don't care.
Exactly.
I went to the Ohio State game because one of my best friends lives in Columbus. So he's like, come down. There was a hockey game I went to too. It was Canada versus USA for the World Cup. So it was funny, man, because I'm like, well, I can't wear Ohio State. Like colors or like anything, so I just dressed like all in black, and I was the only person in the stadium not wearing Ohio State stuff. Like 100,000 people, and there was not a single other person the whole day I saw.
Wow, that's crazy. Was it just red?
It was bright red and white. Everyone just wearing actual Ohio State stuff. Every single person. I didn't see a single one. There was like an old guy I saw. I was like, oh, there's an old guy. He's not wearing anything. And I was like, he's got an Ohio State lapel pin. Like, come on.
Who did they play?
They played Tulsa, which was random.
Oh, I was wondering why Tulsa didn't have any fans down there, but now I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's always just funny, man, with Michigan. Like, isn't it just classic Michigan for them to have a great season, win all the games they're supposed to, and then some they're not, and then lose a game like that? Come on.
You know, in the anticipation of it, knowing that they're going to crumble at some point,
right,
I think made their winning the first eight games really difficult for me to enjoy, because it was like this impending doom that I knew was on its way, and it was just a matter of time. But to lose that, and then to, I think Spate has a collarbone broken, right? They say that this morning.
I didn't hear that, no.
Yeah, so I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen now. So yeah, we'll see.
Damn. Anyway, sorry. I love the tangents, but the non-sports fans are rolling their eyes. So let's get back to music. So you're talking about Bad Channels, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the new project, and you're working with Eric.
Yeah.
So tell me how that came about.
Yeah, like I said, we just got together and decided to do it. You know, we wanted to write some songs together. You know, like for me, I didn't want to stop singing. Like, when I knew that I needed to kind of rock, you know?
I'm sorry, I lost it for a second. My thing just cut out. Say it again. I can edit it.
Yeah, cool. I know you're going to have to do a lot of editing, sorry. Do you want me to call you back, like, not on FaceTime audio, or do you want me to, like, call you on the phone?
Oh, no. It was literally just my fucking shitty Radio Shack cable that fucked up. That's what that was.
Okay, cool.
I'm not going to edit this, so there, people can hear it cutting out, and they can, the struggle is real, my friends. The struggle is real.
For Bad Channels, you know, I think that what it came down to is, like, I'm not, like, a big fan of playing the guitar and singing. It really frustrates me. I resent the guitar quite a bit, actually, because I'm not as good at it as I should be.
Right.
And I don't have the time to dig in and like do that. So I knew that the singer-songwriter thing was out for me. By the way, I like River Oaks.
Oh, thanks, man.
And then, you know, so like that, I picture that like maybe at like when I'm a little bit older. I don't know, like I'm, that might come up where I have time to kind of work on, you know, the guitar stuff. But I knew I wanted to sing still, but I knew that rock music, like as much as I like loved that last Chiodos record, it just became pretty hard for me to write. I felt really limited, in the lyrics that I was writing. I felt like everything had to be like this weird kind of like angsty poem. And it felt really contrived, and I felt like I'd written the same thing over and over, and it was just like bouncing from like label to radio guy to label to radio guy. And I just decided to get rid of literally everybody on my team. I'm literally managing, tour managing, like everything myself.
Right.
And just kind of start over, you know, and with my, you know, kind of inspiration that I've had with this new lo-fi movement, it kind of just presented itself well, you know? And I'd always been, you know, a fan of like Purity Ring and just like cool indie stuff like that anyways, you know? So it really wasn't like that too far of a stretch for me, but it's a really, really exciting project for me, Bad Channels, because I feel like I can literally do anything that I want to do. So it's basically just me under like a moniker mixed with like, you know, my production stuff.
Right.
And, you know, some friends. So
I get it. I mean, the thing is like, it's a big transition, musically for, you know, fans of Craig Owens, because like we talked about, you know, right out of the gate, the roller coaster career you've had with all these different projects, you know, most of them have been like, you know, hardcore bands, you know, for lack of a better word. Punk bands, hardcore bands, heavy bands, whatever. So, you know, I mean, let's just call it rock music, I guess. That's probably the best way to put it. And this is, you know, different. And a lot of your fans aren't ready for it. A lot of your fans are going to hate it, not because it's bad. They might not even think it's bad, just because it's not what they're used to.
Yeah, totally.
How is that obstacle? I know it's early and maybe you don't know yet, but how are you approaching that?
Yeah, I mean, I was prepared, I think. I sat on this long enough to kind of know what was going to happen.
Right.
You know, I'd shown it to enough like of my peers that I trusted, and a lot of people just in kind of my friends, and you know, you can just gauge the energy when you play songs for people. You know, I had people like really, really support it and love it and be like really inspired by it. I had people like laugh because they had no idea how to react, like how yeah. to like react, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just like a lot. So I was kind of like prepared. I kind of like, I did the testing on my like friends and my family, right. you know? So, but you know, it was a decision I had to make. Like, it was like, do I want to continue to make music and hopefully bring these people along with me, or do I want to be confined and like not be as happy and kind of, you know, stomp around in this old kind of swamp that I'm, you know, I don't know. It was time for me to do something new. And, you know, like the goal was like, I don't know. Like I talked to, a good friend of mine, Mike Kaminsky, you know, Mike,
of course I know Mike.
And we were like, okay, maybe like he helped me a lot with like kind of developing just out of like the kindness of his heart. Like I'd just like email him and he'd help me out. Cause he's the best. And, you know, we were talking, we're like 10%, like if 10% of the people that liked me in the past dig it, then cool.
Sure.
You know? And it's been more than that, it seems. So yeah, I'm pretty excited. I'd like to think that my fans are pretty intelligent, that the stuff that I've done, you know, kind of, supersedes genres, and that it was, you know, it's, that they've kind of grown a little bit with me, you know?
Yeah.
And that's something that I've noticed.
I think so. You know, I mean, the problem isn't, you know, that. I mean, you say 10% of your fans, I'm sure it'll be a lot more than that. The problem is just, you know, YouTube comments. People going on and just one guy,
man,
like,
I've been a
wants
heel.
To be funny.
I've been a heel in this scene for so long.
I know,
like,
man.
Like the past, like since drugs happened, I've been a heel in this scene. So like, I do not give a shit about YouTube.
Right.
Comments.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's like, it just takes,
sure.
you know, one bad apple to spoil the bunch or whatever that saying is. You know what I mean? And then, you know, things are retweeted and whatever. And then it's just ridiculous. But you know, what's funny. I want to bring up is when you talked about playing music for like your friends or your peers or whatever. And for me, like, usually when we make a new record, I usually like play the record for my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because when you listen to it in front of somebody else and you're trying to gauge their reaction, it's almost like listening to it for the first time again. And there's like,
yeah,
it's like
you listen to it through their perspective. You're wondering what they're
yeah,
thinking.
And it's like you're listening to it under a microscope almost. And then like you notice things about it you didn't notice before. You're like, maybe this part's kind of weird, or maybe this like, oh, this lyric, I kind of forgot this lyric's like kind of edgy or whatever. I love that. That's, I guess, any musicians listening to this, they've got to be able to relate to that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, and that just shows you, you know, kind of the power of perspective.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, that ties in even with what you were saying about, you know, negative comments and stuff like that. Like, you know, with kind of the heel role that I've kind of like lived in a little bit for a little bit, you know, not like, first of all, like not in my real life. My real life is awesome and I'm not a heel at all. You know what I mean? Like I have an awesome family and friends. So like outside of real life and like this stuff, the heel thing, you know, that perspective I think comes along with it too. So I can almost listen to it from people's their perspective, the YouTube comments. So I already like knew the comments and everything. But it's crazy. Power of perspective is crazy. You know, I think the coolest thing about Bad Channel so far, at least the reactions, have been the support by my peers. Like, people that, like, you know, like, I've really respected and admired for a long time, you know, have come out and said that they enjoy, you know, the artistry behind this. Yeah. And that makes me feel like I'm doing something right. You know, like, it's just... That's a good feeling. You know what that feeling is like, right? Like, that's a great feeling.
Of course. I mean, being accepted by fans and everything is great, but it's true. When there's other people you respect as musicians and as friends and as people, to have their respect, it is different. It is next level for sure.
Yeah, totally.
So, the video, you're wearing the balaclava mask in the video. Is there any... Well, it must have been hot as fuck, first of all.
So I went with a couple of my friends. We got some brunch and we hit up the Ford Piquette plant. I don't know if you've ever hit that up in Detroit. It's pretty cool. It's like the Ford, like the first like Ford plant. And on our walk back, I was with like two graphic designers and a photographer, right? Yeah. So we start walking through like this abandoned building that we see down the street. And I was like, I absolutely have to do something here. And then like 3 days later, we shot the video.
Cool.
But no, because it was downtown Detroit, it wasn't, it was actually a little colder, at the time.
Oh yeah.
Than you'd probably think. Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, it was a really wide open building, a lot of airflow. But yeah, that video was really, really fun. You know, with the aesthetics I'm trying to create, it's important to me that, you know, I've always kind of committed to everything and I do everything over the top. And I feel like this is, you know, no exception.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to create like an aesthetic with, you know, with the mask. It's not like a thing, you know.
Not like Mask Intruder or anything.
No. I mean, or school. Another one is 21 Pilots or...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, there's just so many artists. But no, it was actually really fun, though.
Cool. No, that's great. And I was just wondering, like, because I always read into everything, I was like, I wonder if this mask represents something. Like, is this a defense mechanism? Like, I'm hiding behind, you know, this music that inevitably people are going to shit talk or something like that. You know, that's kind of like what went through my head.
Yeah, I think that there was definitely like, listen, like you know, you make these subconscious, like a decision like that subconsciously, right?
Right.
Like it's, you know, it's not like you almost sit down and talk about it.
Yep.
Unless you have like an art director or something. It's usually like a subconscious kind of thing. And I have no idea why I wanted to do it that way. And
right.
Then the next couple of days when I started looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, cool. So it felt like what I was doing was making it so I could almost take away the past when people saw it for the first time. Like by taking my face away, it felt like I could take away the association that they have in their head for what I should be.
Exactly.
Sonically,
I totally get that.
What I should look like. And, you know, especially with the rollout, it's like, it's almost this big transition phase, you know, this big transition period. And I think it was to like catch them after they like, you know, fell over from shock. Like it was like a soft, you know, almost like a hey, look at this, hey, look at this, and then I'm like doing something else with the other hand, you know.
Well, and all the new people that, you know, aren't familiar with your old music are gonna be like, oh yeah, this new band is cool, and oh, he must be wearing a mask because he's like super ugly. And then you're gonna take it off and everyone's gonna be like, oh shit, man, he's a babe.
I hope so. Yeah, I don't know like when I'm gonna start like really kind of showing my face in the videos. Like I don't know if you saw, but there's another video that I just released like on Friday
for a song called Dotted.
Yeah, it's called Dotted Lines. And I think you'd actually like the lyrics to that song because it's about my time in the music industry, and I think that you
cool.
would actually, you know, find some little things in there. I think musicians alike will. And in that, I'm also rocking like kind of these True Detective masks. It's like, you know,
nice.
Super grainy, moody, black and white out in Joshua Tree. So, and I shot that like over a year ago.
What's that called for people to check it out?
Came out. It's called Dotted Lines.
Okay, Dotted Lines. Cool.
Yep.
Nice, dude. No. Well, it's great. I mean, it's really great to hear you got a new project off the ground. You're passionate about it. And I see you got some tour dates coming up. The record's available. The record is available for pre-order, badxchannels.com. Is that it?
Yep.
Badxchannels.com. So there you go. There's a plug. But hey, I want to go back. Oh, I love the... First of all, I know you put out that like weird grindcore thing. What was it called? Beast?
Yeah, Beast.
Beast with a 5 for the S. I really liked it, man.
Yo, thank you. I'm going to actually, after we get off the phone, I'll send you... we recorded another EP like 2 months ago.
Oh, sick.
We just drank a lot of tequila and I just sat on the couch screaming my head off.
Perfect. No, I was like pleasantly surprised when I found it. I found it a little like, I don't know, I found it like maybe a month ago or something. I hadn't heard about it. And what was funny was I read like an article that was just basically, you know, shit talking you, being like, oh, Craig Owens has a terrible grindcore project. And I was like, okay, I want to hear his terrible grindcore project. And then I listened to it and was like, this is actually awesome.
Thank you.
And but it goes back to what you were saying about the heel thing, I guess, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and well, actually, that's like, that's almost like a cosign in the metal world. Like, if they tell you you suck, like in the metal world, that's like a cool thing. That's like, that's like a, you know, that's like a rite of passage. Like, as long as they're talking about metal people, if they really hate something, I feel like they just don't even talk about it. You know what I mean? But that was super fun. When I was living in Malibu, I literally just had my friend Hiram over and we just recorded a grindcore EP in my bedroom. And then like I said, a few months ago, we recorded another one, at his place in Arizona. And we, and I don't know like how I'll release it or something, you know, maybe I'll do like a Bad Channels Presents or something like that.
Sure. Yeah.
It depends on what Sal wants to do at Sharp Tone. And yeah, so it's a bit more like one song stops into like this Frankie Valli doo-wop and then goes back in real heavy. I kind of get a little more Blood Brother-y like on it, you know, like kind of just out of key, out of, you know, just not out of key, but out of key. Do you know what I mean? They would always kind of live in the minors and the accidentals and it would almost sound completely out, but
I totally know.
Yeah.
What you mean.
So yeah, that was super fun. I've always wanted to do something
cool.
Like that.
No, I back
yeah, you it. Like that kind of stuff, right?
I like everything, but yeah, I just wanted to reference. I wanted you to know I knew about it and I backed it. So, hey, all right, let's get into it. We got to talk about Chiodos. I know the other day you said basically Chiodos is done, for good, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess now is the time. I feel like you know me well. The band's done. We can kind of go back and talk about, you know, like look back at the history of the band, at all the stories that happened, and maybe we can talk about, you know, with fond memories, all the things that happened, and kind of just where your perspective is on that part of your life, and you know, how you feel about the success and some of the failure that you had.
Yeah, man, I'd love to.
So I mean, let's take it. Let's start with how it all came up with Chiodos. Like I remember back in 05, the first time we met, we were on Warped Tour. I don't know if you remember this. And you came up to me and you said to me, "How does it feel to have everybody singing your songs back to you?" That's what you said to me.
And, oh yeah,
yeah. That's what you said to me, and I was like, "It's pretty cool, man. I guess. Like I don't know."
Like weirdo.
And I was no, you were sweet. And we've been friends ever since. But I'm just like, take me how it was being a kid from like Flint, Michigan, you know, not a music hotspot, not, you know, not at all. Take me through how it became like, you know, you became this persona in the scene and in the music scene and everything, how big you guys got, and then the fall from grace and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah, I know, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's, I mean, first of all, I guess, you know, I started out just wanting to sing, and playing in the band was always like literally my, just my favorite thing. You know what I mean? Like it was just my life, completely my passion and all that. You know, I was just really naive and I was just like waiting for someone to tap me on the shoulder and be like, dude, this is all like, you need to go. You do not belong here. Like you're not tricking anybody. You know, I was just waiting for someone to like find me out, you know, like shit, when are these guys going to know that like we don't actually know what we're doing?
but that's what everyone says, you know, that's what everyone
know,
no
right?
knows what they're
for
doing.
Sure. And so, you know, things just kind of kept happening. And like, I've always been a really competitive person, you know, like I love sports, I love all that kind of stuff. So I'm always trying to like push myself to get better, you know? I'm always trying to like find new ways to like quote unquote win or, you know, all that. And winning is like, that doesn't just mean like be successful, famous, blah, blah, blah. That means like, just achieve your goals, you know, and you have to make kind of evolutions in yourself in order to reach them. And I guess I would just like study and adapt. And I just, I don't know. We all just kind of worked our ass off. And yeah, I mean, you know, we kind of, you guys were before us, but not long. You know what I mean? Like,
no, we had a couple
right
years on you, maybe.
Yeah. So, you know, like we would always see, you know, the shows you would play or the, you know, just, yeah, the whole thing, the whole scene, the message boards, the, all that stuff. And just, yeah. So we would just grind and we booked, we met this dude from Ann Arbor who was a college student and he was like, and this is before 2005. This is like when we were still local.
Yeah.
And he was like, let's just put you guys out on the road. So him and I just put in the work and booked like 7 DIY full US tours, by ourselves. And we just put in work every day and made sure that every person at that show would come back and tell their friends, next time we came around, you know?
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny how now you're kind of doing the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I feel
like that's the best method.
It's like you started out and you knew more what you were doing back then, you know, and then everything gets out of your hands, you know, you start having agents and managers and everything, you know, start doing all the work and you don't even know which way is up anymore. And now it's like you're relearning how the music industry works. That stuff is that accurate, would you say?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think we all are as like it progresses, you know, and as technology advances and just the culture, you know, as it all kind of evolves. So, yeah, I personally like that method. I think like it's important for artists to stay humble and connected with you know, everybody, and it's important to put in that work.
Yeah, I agree.
You know. Within reason, like if it's too much work, I understand that balance is super necessary to stay like mentally and kind of physically even healthy, you know, to exist. Really important. That's like the number one thing I tell bands because I produce so much now.
Yeah.
And they always ask for advice and I just tell them you have to just work like just 10 times harder than everybody else, you know.
It's
like
true. It's true. Well, back to Chodas. I mean, you guys got this level of success. I'm not going to say quickly. I mean, you guys put in the time, definitely paid your dues, but then it seemed like, you know, when your first record came out, it was selling a boatload of copies every week. You guys were on tours where opening for bands and everyone's leaving after you play. You start getting this level of success. How, you know, being a bunch of kids from Flint, Michigan, Davison, Michigan, wherever the hell that is. I think it's near Flint, right?
Yeah. I live like right, like I grew up like right on the border of Flint and Davis.
Okay, yeah. So I should know. My Michigan geography really should be better than that, but
it's all good. It's northern Michigan. It's like an hour north of I think where you'd be.
Yeah. So because I used to live in Detroit basically. So for people that don't know.
I remember.
you get the success and you're these kids from Flint, Michigan that you feel like you've pulled the wool over everyone's eyes and convinced them. How was handling the success? Because I know in a lot of ways, Chiodos became a bit of a party band. You know, and I think that that part of like your personality is what led you guys to have problems and is what led you to, you know, not be in the band anymore.
Yeah, you know, like it's interesting to hear that perspective. Like it's interesting because I definitely never like considered us a party band, at least myself included in that. Because I've always had really bad, like, I guess I'll walk you through it. Basically, if you met me pre-2005, then you would have met, like, probably, like, the sweetest, like, you know, kid with the most innocent eyes, just really working hard, so excited. Mm-hmm. When we started getting bigger, I started feeling a lot more pressure from my peers specifically, that really kind of broke my spirit down and kind of hurt my confidence.
Right.
But the fans would kind of make up for it. And then I was kind of broken just continuing to go down this, you know, this thing. And I kind of became, you know, for lack of a better word, I became pretty reclusive. Like I wouldn't really hang out. I would just hide on the tour bus. Yeah. I just had really bad social anxiety. And I was just, you know, pretty much just, afraid of everybody all the time. And then when I'd walk out, you know, I tried to overcompensate by like holding my head up high and being like coming across really confident.
Yeah.
I think, and then anybody that talked to me noticed both sides of that probably. But it was hard, you know, it was really hard. Whereas the guys kind of like went down the path of like drinking and like community and crazy stuff. I kind of went down like the take pills, hide from people, watch movies and only talk to like, you know, people in like kind of one-on-one, two-on-two situations.
Right.
Like that's kind of what my life, you know, became really.
Right.
And I at that point, I'd pretty much detached from my family. I'd pretty much detached. I mean, I had so many friends, but it wasn't like I had a lot of great friends, pretty much all consistently throughout it. But I guess I wasn't really a good friend. You know what I mean? During that time, because I was just I don't know how to like describe what it was. It was just a whole. It's something that happens, I think, in your 20s. You become like super selfish, right? Like it's all about you. You kind of cut your family out. You kind of start putting your dreams and all that stuff first. Mm-hmm. And you kind of lose yourself along the way. And then at one point you're like, oh shit, what am I doing? And you come back.
Right.
That it was like that, but just amplified a ton, you know?
So you're separating yourself from the band. Did that become, I guess that became a problem where the other guys in the band are kind of all hanging out together and you're not around. And was that separation sort of what led to, you know, you, I don't even know what happened. Did you leave the band? Did they kick you out of the band? I don't remember what happened.
Yeah, I got kicked out and yeah, that's totally what happened. Like it was because when there's separation in a band, like, you know, this when like, I'm sure you've seen it with bands, something. So when you separate yourself like that, you know, it really makes it so every time, like you're in the room, you can feel this like tension. Right.
Yeah.
And since I was kind of handling so much of the business and all that, it kind of comes across in this natural, like leadership thing, you know, like that's just a role that like, I don't know, like it wasn't like I was like leading them anywhere, but I kind of was in that role, you know? Like, it's not like I would be like making all the decisions or anything by any means, but, I'd kind of be the, you know, the one to communicate with everybody, like the managers and labels and stuff. And, so that combined with the separation creates these like really tense, like dad vibes, like when you're in the room, like, oh shit, Craig's here. We kind of can't like be ourselves. You know what I
right.
mean? We can't do that. And the combination of that and, you know, just any sort of separation creates room for conflict. You know, it creates miscommunication. It creates a lack of communication. And it's not like, but it's not like we ever had time to process anything that was going on. You know,
of
like,
course, sure.
That's like the number one thing I think like that could have saved us was like, had we had someone to be like, you guys have to take like 2 months off and like, just try and be normal for a little bit. You know what I mean? Stop the machine, get off and like, just process. That way we could have like realized who we became. But when it just goes so quick, you know, you kind of get lost along with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when, you get kicked out of your own band, they get a different singer. What did that feel like? It always fascinates me, like to see a different guy singing your songs. Like, how weird is that?
Like, I don't know what, like, yeah, I don't know. I try to be careful with how I speak about it. I've always tried to be careful because I respect and love the hell out of the guys in Chiodos. You know, like,
yeah,
we're brothers. That's never going to change. You know, like, I'm sure you've had member changes. You know, like, whenever you're apart from them, it's like it's weird at first or whatever, but you will always have this deep love. You know,
yeah.
And the Chiodos guys, I literally went to like middle school with them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll always have love. So I always try and like be careful. I wasn't really around during the time that they made that side. I know it was hard on them. You know, I think that one of the main things kind of carried over was, you know, I think it made, at least from my perspective, it made them a bit more jaded towards music in general. I don't know if they were ever able to recover even during Devil.
Right.
You know, because they went, because the backlash was so bad, you know, because people didn't, you know, respond well.
Right.
So, but yeah, I was out and it was crazy. It was crazy. I was super bummed, devastated when it first happened. Tried to pick myself up, probably didn't really actually get over it for, I don't know, like a year and a half, maybe. Stuff like that takes time, you know?
Of course.
And I know that people, like, with the public perception or whatever, they want you to, like, pick it up, dust it off, start a new band the next day,
and
all
did.
As well. But, like, that's yeah, I know, but that wasn't even, like, my idea to do it, by the way. But, yeah, I mean, it just, yeah, it's just not that easy to
no,
do, you
no,
know?
It's not. And especially, like, I love that thing. How people expect you to be this confident lead singer. I'm Craig Owens, whatever, exactly, dust it off. Hey, I'm in a new super group now. You know, we're a super group, which is like even better than my old band that I've worked my whole life, you know, building, that I'm not in anymore, you know, and still exists. Like, that must have been so difficult for you. And I guess let's talk about drugs while we're on the subject. I mean, had some pretty big success for a while.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, drugs like was quick, and it did well, you know, it did really well for
yeah.
a minute. And I think that it was a lot of fun. I basically had gotten everything I asked for. You know, when it came down to it with the separation and the guys in Chiodos, I kind of felt like I was doing a lot in Chiodos
yeah.
and I'd always wanted, you know, when you're in it, you're like, I, you know, can't you guys just like help with this? Like, can't you just handle like this or that or just one thing? You know what I mean? And it became really appealing to me, to have the opportunity to surround myself with like kind of a bunch of me's,
right,
you know, like a
right,
bunch
yeah.
of like leaders. Oh man, that's not a good idea. Don't do that.
Too many cooks in the kitchen. That's like, you know.
Yeah,
I totally get it.
It's all good until it's not all good. Do you know what I'm saying? Like it's like you're playing like a game of like King of the Hill very consistently and like you're up there for a while and you hold your ground, but the moment you like don't pay attention or the moment you start getting tired, like someone will be like right there. You know what I mean? Watching.
Right.
So it was always, kind of intense, you know. It was also hard for me in drugs because it was nothing, like it couldn't have been more opposite of Chiodos. None of us grew up together. We were all previously successful. Nick was really my only, you know, the person that I actually knew well previous to the band. So that's a lot different than your middle school friends.
I know. I know.
And surrounded by, man, just Hollywood and all these things, signed to a major label. And it was hard because I'd signed with Warner Brothers, but I hadn't put the band together yet. So I was the only one signed, and I constantly felt guilty about not having the other guys signed. But it wasn't like a... So they had signed a contract with me because that's how management wanted it, right? So the whole thing, like, just from the get-go, like, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know how long, you know, how it lasted as long as it did, really.
Crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. No, I mean, I was expecting a second Drugs record. I was expecting, you know, it to be special. And I expected you guys to get along better, I guess, because I know everyone in the band, and I'm friends with everybody in the band. You know, and I was like, everybody's a good dude.
I literally thought the same thing. Like, when the Chiodo stuff came up, we were straight just going to do shows. And then there had been talks of a record, like talks of just making music, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's seen it now. How many times has it happened in our scene? Like, you just can't, you know, you can't be in however many bands at once. And I really wasn't thinking like that. The Chiodos guys were kind of coming from a different perspective.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know. The whole thing, is kind of crazy. It fell apart, when we got dropped, and then Adam decided he didn't want to really make music anymore. And then it just got a little crazy after that, you know? And we just weren't able to recover. You know, we tried and we tried and we tried. And yeah, they're like, everybody in that was in drugs are like the best dudes ever.
Yeah.
They were the best dudes ever. Like, I wasn't the best dude when I was in the band. I mean, it wasn't like I was like an awful shithead or anything. You know what I mean? It's not like I was like doing anything horrible to anybody. But, you know, I just wasn't like in the position to lead. Right. You know, and that's disrespectful.
Well, it seems like you've been through the ringer. I mean, obviously, like with your exit from Chiodos, and then you're thrown into this band, and there's a lot of expectations.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. It's weird. Like, you know, you talk about you being the heel. You've brought it up numerous times. You said I wasn't a good dude at the time. I've heard people shit talk you. You know, I've heard it, but I gotta say, man, I've never had a bad interaction with you ever. Every time I've ever hung out with you, and it's been a lot, we did tours together, Warped Tour together, I've always thought you were a great dude and a stand-up dude every single time. So I don't know kind of where your reputation stems from. I don't see it.
Man, that means a lot. Awesome. That's great. You know, like I feel that way too. I think a lot of it is because I think that I have a polarizing characteristic about my persona, my personality. And I think that depending on, you know, like even Bad Channels, like when it first released, all that was clickbait combined with my polarizing personality, and then the ski mask giving a reason for people, you know, for something to say. It's a part of my personality. And I think, you know, I was talking about it yesterday. I mentored this awesome kid, Lonnie from Kentucky. And, you know, we were talking about it yesterday that I was just telling him that the polarizing side of what it is that I do is also what makes it so special, you know? So it's like the same reason that people love me is the same reason that people hate me, you know? So I'm okay with it at this point in my life.
Right.
For a while, I just like kept looking in like, what is wrong with me? You know what I mean? Like, what is wrong with me? And then I eventually just grew up, and realized that, you know, nothing is wrong with me. You know, I'm a great dude. So, but that's in real life. You know, I used to let it bleed into my real life, but you know, that kind of persona, I think I'm just polarizing. And I think that, you know, it kind of sways, you know, like sometimes I'm the heel, but sometimes I'm not. You know what I mean? So it's literally like how the article is typed up, how the story is, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But anybody that I think, like my fans, I think my friends, you know, like you, like just even like other musicians and stuff, I think they know.
I don't know. I've never seen you do anything bad ever. Like, ever. I've never heard you say anything bad, and I just don't get it. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the club. I'm trying to come up with excuses for it, you know? Like, do you hear me over
excuses
here?
Excuses for other people.
I know. Fuck that. I can say that, right? I can swear on here?
You can say anything you want to say.
Cool.
How do you feel about Trump? Just want to get some swear words out of you.
To be honest, like, I feel like someone came up and like shook the ground like we're in a giant snow globe or something, like shook us, and like I'm just now like kind of getting my balance back. Like, I feel like I've been in shock for the and I've been super quiet about it. Like, anytime anybody talks about it, because obviously the oversaturation of the media and even social media, When I heard it, I mean, obviously I felt my heart drop into my stomach, but I feel like it stayed there and it's supposed to come back up, you know? So I don't know. I'm just kind of, I feel like everybody is just, you know, and is it December 18th where he inaugurated? I don't know. I could be totally wrong on that date.
I'm not sure.
But either. I feel like everybody's just kind of, you know, grinding their teeth until then. So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of right there too. Like, I'm just like white knuckle, like holding on, like hoping that something happens. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, you talk about polarizing. You live in a very polarizing state, an area of a state too.
Man.
Well, I guess not Detroit, true. But Flint, you know, is probably, I don't know. There's definitely some, you know, red people up there. I don't mean native people.
Yeah,
that sounded
crazy.
Racist. I meant red, like as in Republican people.
No. Yeah. No,
I don't mean Native Americans.
Listen, yeah, no one thinks you're racist, Shane. You're all good. but yeah, it's crazy. I like living out in California and then moving back, like there really is a big jump.
Sure.
You know, when you tour, it kind of all kind of melts together. It's like one night and it's, you know, it's not a lot of time, but the jump has been kind of crazy.
Yeah, why did you move back to Michigan?
My little brother had a kid, so that was really like the main reason. And I kind of spent, like I said, like my 20s pretty much just like self-driven and passionate, and I decided that it's time to be a little more selfless. So I just came back home to connect with my family, and that's all I've done in the past. Like I feel, I always say that I'm like running for president, to tie it in, of my family, because I'm like putting in work. Like,
yeah,
I mean like just a ton of family time. So, yeah, it was just for family.
No marriage or kids for you yet?
No, I'm all good. I'm all good.
all good. Me neither,
you know,
man.
Well,
me neither.
Well, here it is. Listen, there's definitely like stuff happening there. But I'm totally trying to keep it out of like anybody, like outside of my whatever knowing.
Sure.
Like, I'm just, you know, like at this point, like I didn't sign. I know that like sometimes fame is a necessary evil to communicate your message. You know, like, I get that, but I never signed up for that. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, I really never signed up for that. I did it because I wanted to help out my bands. I did it because, you know, there were times when I relished in it, sure. But now that, you know, I've kind of come out the other side and it kind of comes back in and out and it kind of bobs and weaves out of my life, I try to, like, keep my personal stuff super personal. And that's, I think, a lot of the reason why I kind of disappeared, like, the last, like, year and a half. Even my social media, you know, like, all I do really do is talk about music, talk about being at the studio, talk about maybe personal things, or I share pictures of my nephew. But a lot of the time, I like to keep my personal stuff, like, I don't know. I just don't like that energy.
Yeah.
You know, that same, I don't want that YouTube comment energy to, like, hit my real life like that. You know what I mean? So I try and keep it, like, an arm's length.
You're absolutely entitled to your privacy. Well, hey, man, thanks. I got to ask you one more thing before I let you go. How did this Dr. Dre thing happen? With I don't know if people know.
It's crazy,
know,
right?
But yeah, Craig has a very small part, but it's still a part on the latest, the final Dr. Dre record, Compton. So yeah, how the fuck did that happen?
Yeah, so my good friend John Connor is from Flint. You know, we've been supporting each other for.
Sorry, I had to make the reference.
So we have been supporting each other for years, you know, and when he called me, I think I was on Warped Tour in Chicago, and he's like, "Man, Craig, I'm about to walk into a room with Dr. Dre." Like, he'd gotten offers from, like, Nas and Rockefeller and Rick Ross and all these people, you know, and we'd just been talking about it because I'd been in the music industry for a while and I was just trying to help out my friend. And so he meets with them and it, like, happens, right? Then I'm in New York, upstate New York, recording the last Chiodos record, and I get a phone call from John saying that Dre had heard my voice and they want me to fly out the next day. So
wow.
Then I know, right? It's like a dream kind of scenario. So I obviously say yes, go out to California. And we start writing music together. Me, John, Exhibit, and Dre, all in the same room, writing on these songs. And then we recorded until like 7 a.m. I had an 8:30 flight back to New York. And on the way out, you know, Dre shook my hand and was like, "Man, you're really talented. I'd love to continue working with you." And that's been the case, you know. So whenever they would have sessions, they would just call me in, and I'd work with John, I'd work with Dre,
wow.
Work with whoever's there, just in the camp.
How does Dr. Dre
Candace
work?
Play like, and
like, how does Dr. Dre write a song? I just, like, wonder, because, like, obviously, you know, we both are from the rock world, you know, originally, and, like, making rock music is a lot different from making hip hop. So I'm just wondering, like, how does that work? Like, how does he make records and write songs?
I think a lot of it, he will. So how first it starts with the beat for Dre.
Mm-hmm.
It's live bass players. It's like, he'll get these, like, crazy talented, like, people in there. And they will just turn it up super loud. Like, the loudest sessions I've ever heard, or first of all, are with Dre. Like, every snare, anything, or you're definitely blinking your eyes. It's like, he definitely listens to it the loudest out of anybody. But when it's beat making time, I mean, that shit is bumping. Like,
yeah.
You can hear it down the block. And then from there, you know, it's perspective, man. And he's the golden child. Everything he touches is crazy. So okay, I'll finish up super quick. I got a call like a year ago from John. I hadn't heard from them for a couple months. John had gone on like songwriting trips to like Hawaii and places like that with Dre, and John hits me up. He's like, "Hey man, like, listen, we need to talk. Dre's doing a record. It's real. This is actually happening. He's scrapped I can't remember what the name of the record was supposed to be. Oh, Detox. He scrapped Detox.
Yeah.
And man, I feel really disrespectful. It's been crazy, like 2 weeks. So he scrapped Detox and it's almost done. He's putting the final touches on it the next couple days. And we were talking today and he said he wants you to come down. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? So it comes the next day at like 11 o'clock. You know, I'd already like smoked a bowl and had some tequila, right? I was like ready for bed, like glasses on, like ready for bed. Like I'm not singing tonight, right? Like I don't drink before I play. I don't smoke before I play, nothing, right? Like I take singing very seriously and performing. So then all of a sudden my phone rings, like right as my eyes are like shutting, and I pick it up and it's Dre, and he's like, Craig, what are you doing? And I was like, nothing, man. I'm just kind of hanging out. He's like, we need to get down in the studio. So I literally dropped everything, threw on some clothes, and we recorded that song all night. And yeah, so I did a whole like intro for that song that didn't make it, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of know why, and I'm kind of glad he didn't, because every time I've written a song with Dre, he makes me sing gunshots, and I don't think it's ever sounded like as tough as it should. Do you know what I mean? like blah, 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 like straight up. I'm not even kidding. So
how many guns have you fired in your life, Craig?
Oh man, like I think like one. I'm not like the biggest gun advocate, really.
What'd you think? I sold them all? Yeah. Oh man, that's great though. That's such a cool experience. And I mean, geez, like as a producer now, it must be pretty cool to have him in your contacts. You know,
man, it's crazy. Anytime I was around Dre, I just shut up and I just listened.
Yeah,
and I just tried to soak in every little thing that I possibly could. Probably too much to where I didn't enjoy it as much as I should have, but the combination of shock and curiosity was, you know, enough for me.
That's so cool, man. Hey, well, it's really great to have you, man, and catch up. And yeah, man, I'm only like 4 hours away. If I'm in town, let's grab a drink.
Man, like I'm telling you, let's hang. I wanted to hang last time, but I don't think we were able to. But let's make plans.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. No, thanks for doing this, and all the best with Bad Channels. Hopefully, send me that beast stuff too. I want to hear that.
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Dude, thank you, man. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks, Shane.
Yeah, man. Take care. There it is. Always great talking with Craig. Such a great dude. I love talking about Michigan football. I love talking about music. I love talking about everything he's up to. The Dr. Dre story is incredible. So awesome talking to him, and I really wish him luck with Bad Channels. It's really cool that he's putting himself out there. It really, some people think it's going to be selling out, and it is the opposite. It would be so easy for him to just start another heavy band, but he didn't do it. He went on his own and he did what he wanted to do, and he's following his heart. So here it is, Bad Channels on Lead Singer Syndrome. We'll see you next week. Peace and love.
Go play hard in the bottle.
Don't everything is safe. Don't knock it out, just